I'm Ahmed Raoufi from Al-Madina, Saudi Arabia. I'm a sociologist, lecturer, and researcher interested in culture, politics in the Gulf.
I'm Michelle Shifaletti, and you're listening to Thaqafat.
Ahmed Raoufi is a non-resident senior researcher and the head of the Cultural Studies Unit at the King Faisal Center for Research and Islamic Studies in Saudi Arabia. He is a PhD candidate in sociology at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. His areas of research include political sociology, cultural modernization, and the politics of culture, art, and urban spaces. So as our listeners know, we typically interview creatives from throughout the region, but today we are very, very lucky because we have Ahmed, who is an expert on culture and the cultural development of Saudi Arabia. So I'm very pleased to have him today to be able to provide some background, history, and insights into the cultural changes that have been occurring and also the history of the cultural changes over the past few decades. Ahmed, welcome.
Thank you.
As everyone knows, Saudi Arabia has been kind of at the forefront. There's been a lot of buzz around cultural institutions being built and kind of this, quote, new culture, I'll say, that's being developed in the country. But I think it's really important that we put this all into context and talk about the historical context of Saudi Arabia and the kind of the historical dimension. So why don't you share with us a little bit about the history of culture in Saudi Arabia beyond just the early 2000s of what we're looking at now today?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. It's my pleasure to be with you in this podcast. This is actually a very important question, I think, because as you said, it's just sometimes the excitement of the moment just make us forget the bigger picture. So it's important sometimes to just zoom out and see this in context. It's very hard to actually cover a history. It's not only I'm talking about like a long history, but also different disciplines of art and culture. But just to emphasize, when I say culture here, I'm not talking the culture in an anthropological sense. I'm talking more of creative culture, kind of creative production and intellectual activities, like poetry, film, painting, and so on. I will just highlight two features of the history of the cultural fields in Saudi Arabia. I mean, it goes really back to the mid and even farther 20th century, when you see intellectual and creative were able to overcome kind of restrictive circumstances. So this is like not news in the 2000s. So what's actually remarkable about the Saudi intellectuals and creative is that in spite of the lack of institutional support, and sometimes in spite of the institutional obstacles, they were able to produce and to thrive. I'll give just one example. In the 1960s, the first like modern attempt at like creating modern theater in Saudi Arabia by the prominent Saudi intellectual Ahmed al-Sibai. In the 60s, he actually struggled to get a permission for creating an open theater in Mecca, but it failed. But that doesn't prevent the production of plays. Mm-hmm. So Saudi writers have been producing play even 30 years earlier, from the 1930s. So eventually they had some spaces in education and in Jamiat al-Thaqafa al-Funun, the Society for Saudi Arabian Art and Culture in the 70s. But it just shows, it used to go also from the bottom up. It's not just the idea of a conservative society that right. There's nothing going on. Another actually example would be the beautification of Jeddah. So Jeddah if you see picture of Jeddah, in the 80s and the 90s, you see these beautiful artworks in the public spaces, in the roundabouts, in public squares, on the Kurnish. And this was a conscious project by the mayor of Jeddah, Mohammed Farsi, who actually tried to commission 300 artwork to be put in public spaces. But what people don't know about this project, actually, it wasn't funded publicly, because he actually couldn't secure the public fund. It was funded by the community, the merchant community of Jeddah, which is also remarkable to see, like, a whole city like transformed into public space through the support of the community. So that has been always there. And the other thing is that the Saudi creatives, and this is like one of the points that is rightfully, I mean, the movement of 2000 rightfully praised with is kind of the kind of social and sometimes political critique that they brought in, which is true, but also in the history has been always, the major works in Saudi Arabia, the major kind of periods of art movements actually were connected with the wider society, and at least the issue of the wider society, even if it's like not, sometimes it was sort of elite practices, but nevertheless, they actually were engaged. I mean, a prime example of a movement that is kind of covered in Arabic is the modernism movement, the literary movement of modernism in the mid-2000s that created like a societal debate and a group of poets, literary critics who kind of challenged the traditional form of poetry, but it wasn't only the form. That's why, hence the controversy, it's actually, they had kind of agenda of social reform and sometimes political critique that was engaging, and even if it's like kind of sometimes clouded behind symbolism, but it shows that has been always. And if you go in there to the 60s, you have a similar kind of the realist school in literature, in some of the literary writings that accompanied calls for social justice and labor movement in the 60s. So this is just like small examples. We can go on and on, but just to emphasize that there is more to that, and I think we need even to see more of kind of historical documentation and research and writing in English and also in Arabic.
You touched upon a point that's really important, and that's the idea of the community engagement and the historic role that community has played, oftentimes in absence of institutional support historically. Can you share a little bit more about obviously there's various different time periods that this has played. We can talk about the 60s, the 80s. There's been multiple movements that have kind of, that are relevant to this discussion, but share a little bit of an overview for people who maybe aren't familiar about the role that community and individuals have played in the role of culture and arts over kind of the historic periods that we're discussing.
Yeah, I would go back as far as the 1920s, even, you can see, because this is part of my work, is to see kind of the origin of the formation of kind of the intellectual, the category of intellectual or creative. I mean, as far as the 20s, like the states was still forming. I mean, you see some kind of articles, newspapers, and some records of Odaba, or kind of men of litter, of essayists, poets, who are actually having a conversation that we need Rabatat al-Udaba. And to add more to that, I mean, the main cultural institutions in Saudi Arabia before the Ministry of Culture formation in the 2000 was the literary clubs and the society I mentioned, the Jama'iyya, Society for Arts and Culture. That was actually, even though it's created by the government, it can be semi-government institutions, that was by request, I mean, constant requests of, multiple requests of Udaba or intellectuals to ask for an institution that they can actually operate within. And it's actually followed a very important conference in, I think, 1973, I think. It's like the first conference that kind of recognized the intellectuals and Udaba. Also, in the time of the weaknesses of the institution, the 80s and the 90s, where there was like shrinking support for culture, partially because of the strain of the financial crisis, of the collapse of the oil prices in the mid-80s. you see actually an interesting phenomena that a lot of art communities of visual artists forming. I mean, it's short-lived sometimes, it's like very informal, but there is, if you look at the list that some people try to document, it's just everywhere, because they know that if there is no institution, just we can pull out resources from within the community of artists. Also, when you talk about the modernism movement that I mentioned,
yeah.
It actually was a movement in a sense that they were a network of intellectuals, whether in the literary clubs, some of them were working in newspapers, so they know each other, support each other, they have kind of a more cohesive collective identity. So that was not unique to the 2000.
It's interesting because what comes across is you know, despite different approaches across time periods, there's still a consistency of this integral part of the community and, you know, civil society, grassroots. Can you talk a little bit about the intellectual creative and kind of the role that it has on the societal dimensions, how it reflects society, and the role that that's kind of played in a historical context?
The cultural field was not homogeneous. I mean, there were differences. And similar to the more kind of liberal or modernist, if you want to put them in one category, intellectuals or creatives, there was actually more kind of conservative movement. Conservative also can take different forms. For example, in the literary fields, there was like conservative in a technical term, where so people who want to try to preserve the classical form of Arabic poetry.
Mm-hmm.
So the way I would approach the connection, it would be the field of cultural production kind of reflected society and reflected like different let's say lifestyle, different groups or even classes. Sometimes when we speak of poets or essayist, or like the category of Odaba, you see them the diversity of the field, the diversity in the society reflected in the field. I don't know if the idea is clear. So to get more into what I wanted to say, if you look at the mid 1980s. The modernism movement, despite the fact that it's been a very kind of technical, it's not technical, it's more of it's not a very accessible texts that they produced.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, actually, they actually sparked a wide debate on what kind of society this should be, what kind of life we should have. This debate was being held in Janadria, also in newspapers, despite the fact that it was sometimes kind of uncivil debate.
I want to talk a little bit more about the 80s, because I think the modernization movement was really significant in kind of what's happening today.
Yes.
Can you kind of draw on that time period and maybe how it's kind of being reflected in some capacity today with what we're seeing in the cultural movements that are occurring now?
I mean, one continuity is that the protagonists of that time, from the modernist side, actually now they serve as advisors, they are celebrated intellectuals, they feel like, I mean, they feel that their dreams came true eventually. So there's like the direct connection. But beyond that, I think we should put it like in a more kind of historical process. So there's no direct link, mm-hmm. of what's been said, what kind of debate that was, as much as it was a point on which a broader kind of debate about the identity and the society was being conducted, and also in the 90s, which is often forgotten when we try to create kind of periods of analyze the development of the cultural field. The 90s actually witnessed a very important change in many of the people who were engaged in literary criticism. Abdullah al-Ghaddami, Saeed al-Sriahi, Saad al-Baz'i, they actually became more interested in a broader kind of cultural issues. So what is being called like cultural criticism or similar to the field of cultural studies. So the fact that we no longer want to just confine ourselves within the literary texts. Mm-hmm. There is kind of a broader cultural phenomena that we need to engage with. So it's the kind of intellectual writing of the 90s leading to the 2000 was like broader and more engaging, even if it's not creating the same kind of traction. And also what's important in the 90s is the rise of the Saudi novel. So it's like starting the golden age of the Saudi novels, where you see a very controversial and very provocative Saudi novels. Some people like Turki Hamad and later Abdul Khal, and a long list of novelists. But what was interesting about it is like the limits, that the way in which that they discuss society. So it reflected more local kind of content, engaging with issues, societal issues, that is has to do with religion, with gender relations. The funny thing that it's most celebrated Saudi novels, it wasn't sold in Saudi Arabia. So it actually was published in Beirut, in Cairo, and it's sometimes difficult to have access to them in Saudi Arabia, especially to the beginning of the 2000. But actually that kept the debate going. The Riyadh Book Fair was an annual event where debate about, as I said, it seems to be about books, literature, but actually it was a broader societal discussion about what kind of society we should be, a more conservative, like sector of the society, active, I would say, sector of the society where have concerns about some of the novels I just mentioned or some of inappropriate ideas from their perspective. But the Riyadh Book Fair created kind of a shift because at first time it actually was lenient in the way of what kind of book that is being brought, and also the cultural events that is held on the site. So it was always a site of debate. So putting that in context, so this was not out of the blue. I'm not saying that what happened in the 80s causally led to this, but right. It's actually what happened to the 80s is part of a bigger narrative of debate, different visions, ideas that was not just born out of the blue in the 2000.
Yeah, I think it's easy to look at, I mean, and obviously, like you mentioned before, I mean, what happened in the 2000s and obviously what's happening now are very significant. Not in any way undermining that, yes. But like you said, there is a larger story that has gotten, I think people now look at, for example, the creation of the Ministry of Culture and think that now culture has appeared. But it's been a deep history of intellectuals and creatives that have kind of helped develop where, where Saudi is today. Let's talk a little bit about the convergence of some of these grassroots and civil society leaders to institutions. You touched upon in the 80s, there were various leaders who are now kind of working in positions of advisors or whatnot. Can you share a little bit more about this convergence that has happened over the past few years specifically to institutionalization?
Yeah, so I think, and here maybe a chance to talk more about the 2000 movements, the more younger generation. It's actually part of a larger story, and it's not exceptional or novel, completely novel. But actually, they have some particularities that's kind of nicely they can put in the context of the more institutional and policy changes. So what differentiate the group of artists here, I'm talking about people like Ahmed Malter, Abdel Nasser Gharim, Manal Adouyan in the visual arts. You have also in the film Wajda Al-Mansour, the director, Mahmoud Sabbagh, Baraka Gabriel Baraka. So yeah, I mean, this is specifically the kind of the cohort of the generation I'm talking about.
And they shift to kind of the more visual aspect.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly the part, the first differentiation, the transition from the heavily textual to kind of heavily visual. Mm-hmm. So it's more, the visual artist has more recognition and celebration than the poets or even the novelists. But also the other thing which was missing in the past or different, the international dimension. So this generation was exceptionally successful in gaining the international attention. And actually that was their breakthrough. They actually got the attention of the state more or the government. I mean, in the past, the engagement of the intellectual or the creative, I mean, the medium where they kind of operate was largely in the Arab world. And also it was influenced by that. I mean, the modernism movement also was part of the broader Arab kind of cultural production. The modernism movement, you can see it in other countries, it has kind of an Arab dialogue. Now with the shift of the 2000, the emphasis is more of the international. So the art being produced is actually, I would say, framed, packaged, or formulated sometimes with a foreign audience in mind, which is nothing wrong with that. It's just trying to kind of to produce kind of what is a local or a Saudi debate or ideas into a more internationally consumable, let's say, form. What's interesting is that the Ministry of Culture and Education and more of culture and information and also other institutions, they started actually to be interested in these groups before the 2005 or the creation of the Ministry of Culture. For example, the first official Saudi participation in the Venice Biennale was actually funded by the Ministry of Culture in 2011, the Ministry of Culture and Information. So they actually realized that this is like a part of the this community of artists are actually getting more attention and they actually can be in line with the policy of more opening up to the world. Mm-hmm. So leading to this point, you see more importantly than the advisors, the people who operate or actually active in the field, that is kind of now, I mean, and under the supervision of the Ministry of Culture, you see the same names that was raised to fame in the 2000. And here comes the conversion between the vision 2030 and what this community of artists has been doing all along. The fact that, I mean, if I can just go back and talk about the vision in few sentences.
Yeah, please.
So culture, why culture is important? Why now the celebration of culture? I mean, you only can understand this in a broader framework of the vision that is basically the latest push to diversify the economy. And now culture is seen as a cultural resource, as resources, and something can be, in the view of some critics, monetized. If you look closely to the document of the vision and the other policies, you see culture connected to something that gave more interest called the quality of life, changing the lifestyle. So the idea is to be part of the world, to be integrated in the global economy, you need a different lifestyle, mm-hmm. that is kind of more compatible, more welcoming to this opening. And here comes the culture. So culture with a distinctively national Saudi identity, but at the same time, it has to be framed in kind of in a global way. It has to be accepting global forms. And that's why I think you see the conversion between the movement and the government. So it's, if we look at what's going on right now, it is a top-down approach to reform, but it's actually missed a big part of the picture if you don't recognize what was happening, what has been happening in the grassroots, and how that grassroots, it just fits nicely with some tension maybe we can discuss, but fits the broader like policy change, and maybe inform, that's even a further claim that it informs the policy changes.
Yeah, it's interesting. You see someone like Ahmed Mater, who started Edge of Arabia, as I'm sure many of our listeners know, and then, you know, going to become head of MISC Art Institute. And a lot of these, you know, really key players now moving towards working in government policy, institutional types of organizations. I want to touch upon the kind of the dynamic between the local audience and the international audience, which you touched on, before we get a little bit more into policy and kind of what is happening in that sense. You know, we see a large push towards nationalization in the country. That's a whole other discussion. And obviously Saudization. How would kind of this outward look towards abroad, how is that informing the policy, or vice versa, really? How can you look at policy and see kind of this outward look towards the international audience and how that affects also the domestic audience, which is obviously also kind of the main audience for the government?
Yes, so that's actually a very important question, because oftentimes you see some argument that paint what's going on in Saudi Arabia, especially from the part of the government, as just a public relations campaign, kind of a shallow change of the facade. I think it's much deeper than that. Regardless of how you evaluate the whole thing, it just someone has to kind of acknowledge the depth of the changes that's going on, because it's really, I talked about the restrictions that has been all that the creatives and intellectuals in Saudi Arabia has always faced. Now they are just removing all these restrictions, opening up even in the public space. Now, the feel of the Saudi cities even changed. Now the beautification of city project is not subsidized by a community. It's actually the state is financially behind it and even plan the change, and the beautification of the city and the presence of public arts in some cities, music. If you go now to the cafe or just in some public squares, it's just there's live music sometimes. So it's so this is like a big change, and change of that magnitude is not possibly just to advertise or brand a nation. It's way deeper than that. It's just, this is like producing a different subject, a different kind of citizen that is more kind of creative, accepting, tolerant. This is from like a top-down like view. Someone would highlight the international dimension to say that this is all for the international audience. I think this is a very limited view that does not see what's really going on the ground. But at the same time, the deep change that is being done has this emphasis on the global or the international in its form. So one clear example would be the opening events. The first event that the Ministry of Culture organized is an Italian opera. So this is like one of the first public events that like open to public for Saudis to go and see Italian opera that is usually considered very elitist, even the West. I attended actually that, and I went, and you see like all walks of life. Yes, it's not only for the international, but also it's kind of a state-managed process of globalization. So the state is kind of endorsing like introducing like the global and trying to reconcile it with specific national identity that has a very global, so it's a kind of a cosmopolitan nationalism or mm-hmm. national cosmopolitanism, I don't know. The only concern I have, if I can add this, it's not the concern that I personally have, but I actually hear sometimes being echoed in the in the art circles, that this emphasis on rewarding the international and the artists, the creatives who made it, who managed to make it internationally, kind of built in marginalization of the people who can't do that. So this is like be an unintended consequences from this interest of being integrated in the world, expressing some frustration from artists who has been always operating like in local institutions that I mentioned before. What does that mean for the cultural production, the content of the cultural production? So if we say that the structure of incentives like reward people who make it internationally, does that mean like more Saudi artists will be keen on speaking to the other and kind of producing an image of the self that fits the expectation of the other? And it's a classical issue when we talk about in kind of post-colonial studies, when you talk about whether globalization is kind of equalizer in terms of like the global art field, or just forcing the global South to just be in conformity with what is internationally accepted. This is like a dilemma that is bigger than Saudi Arabia. But I think when you put the government in the mix, like leading globalization, that will make it a bigger question.
Yeah, and I think another really important point that you touched upon is the idea of the diversity within the Saudi population. I think that, you know, there's been some criticism about, are these reforms only catering to one particular segment of the population? How do you feel like the policies that are enacted, or even kind of within what's happening on the ground, how does that kind of reflect the massive diversity of lifestyles that people in Saudi Arabia live? And I mean beyond geographically, socioeconomically, in terms of conservatism and other things.
The way I would approach this question would be to just ask to just consider the idea of that you always see it in Western media, the ultra-conservative society. I mean, this word has been, I encountered this
word. That's a favorite word in media. Yeah. Ultra-conservative.
What does that mean? I don't know exactly, but it's not a society that I know, I lived in. What I would say is this is like a game of perception that is really about kind of has to do with kind of discourse and knowledge. So that the way Saudi society is framed is always has to do with how people in different positions want to see it. A conservative, let's say, intellectual or sheikh would claim that this is a conservative society. So we shouldn't allow women for to drive. This would create a problem. People will harass women. I mean, women will harass women. So it's actually, and you see it also from some people in policy decision, we can't do anything. I mean, women driving is a society thing. So it's not a policy matter. It's a caveat on using this idea of the Saudi society is conservative. But what's relevant to your question now, people would say, we don't know the Saudi society. The Saudi society is open. So when you see like 60,000 people attended K-pop,
BTS,
and just the commentary is interesting that we don't know the society. Actually, we are under the illusion that the society is conservative, so the Saudi society is just accepting that this is changing, and that's also problematic because you're doing the same thing, the flip side. Of course, not everyone is happy with music in public. That's clear. I mean, you can see it even in some customers of restaurants or cafes who actually frustrated with the idea. I tried to ask the manager of the restaurants to turn off the music because religiously I can't listen to music. They would ignore that. It's maybe these examples that kind of seems trivial, but I think it shows that you can't just create a perfectly coherent national personality, right, and expect like everyone will be on the same thing. I think diversity and discussion and different opinions and the coexistence of different lifestyles, I think, is important. And it has been always in different balances, of course. Even if you go in the 80s, which some characterize as like the 80s and the 90s as the day, the most conservative days in Saudi Arabia, you would see people will still watch movies through videotapes or travel abroad or yeah, have like private music listens. It's actually, it's a societal dynamic that has been always there. Anyone who tried to enforce like one kind of representation of the Saudi society, I think, I think it's just not true.
It's imperative to bring that up because there's such, I mean, even in policy circles, you see this idea that the changes that are happening now are represent a monolith of a society, but yeah, there are so many different fragments of any society, really. Yeah. But before we talk about a little bit kind of where you see the future of the creative industries and kind of cultural production, can you talk a little bit about the industrialization of creativity and kind of how the industry has been integrated also on an economic front?
Yeah, excellent question, because I mentioned before the vision in its essence, it's about economic diversification. Mm-hmm. So you always find the other agendas, the social agenda, sometimes it has some kind of separate independent motivation, but also you always will find connection to the economic realm. So it's clear. It's upfront. You see it in the strategy of the Ministry of Culture. They clearly speak of culture as a contributor to the economic development. As I said, that has two elements: the elements of changing the lifestyle, which is the more implicit or deeper level, but also the one you mentioned is just culture as industry, culture as actually a source of income through the creative economy. A big example of that is film industry. It's the opening of movie theaters that's actually generated huge income. And also it's beyond that is trying to create also the infrastructure. And this is a big investment, so it's costly to create from the scratch an infrastructure, studios and sites and training facilities, art academies. So that's actually an expensive investment, and there is actually an economic calculation for that. That they're trying to, I mean, the ministry or I mean the policy direction in general is how to create a cultural industry that is exportable, that the Saudi film does create a profitable mm-hmm. industry. And even if you see other aspects of culture now that being kind of changing the conceptualization of it and adding kind of a cultural, clear cultural dimension like architecture or fashion. Right. Cultural fashion used to be like construction and clothing industry. Now it has like a creative and cultural aspect that they are trying to invest in, so that this is very clear, and this is and there is huge investment that's been put to create this industry from the scratch. I have to say here that this can create some tension in how to see this. Is it a positive thing? Is it a worrying thing?
Yeah.
I hear it from some intellectuals that they see it as a commercialization of culture. So it's that the kind of culture that being produced will follow the demand. So it's not the kind of culture that more kind of idealist view of culture would hope for. Some would say that this is kind of difficult balance, because you have cultural aspects that is very hard to monetize, and monetizing it would actually create a different thing, like mm-hmm. theater. So
I think especially with the visual arts, this mm-hmm. is a really relevant discussion, because a lot of artists wouldn't necessarily be given the platform or have the opportunity to have the platform. But then is there some kind of hindrance on the kind of organic creative process that it takes to create a visual art? I mean, that's, I think that will take years in order to see kind of the true impact.
Yes, exactly. So it's really too early, because it's too early to see even the impact of the infrastructure, because still, I mean, we still not yet have the art academy yet. I mean, there's something that like creates a lot of optimism is the educational side, of course, the ministry's emphasis on education. And that will open the doors for culture for a kind of a wider audience, and you have a larger pool of creatives. Mm-hmm. You would expect more innovative cultural production. Without mentioning the name of the movie, one of the Saudi films that has been screened in theater, actually they stopped the screening after the third day because there was no demand for this Saudi, mm-hmm. Film. From the perspective of the theater or the theater company, I'm looking for my bottom line. Yep. So Hollywood movies will generate more revenue for me. Why would I waste space and time for an unprofitable movie? That could be solved by subsidizing. Mm. But here, talking about subsidies, then you move beyond sometimes the pure economic calculation of culture. Mm-hmm. So I think that will create tension between the culture that is profitable and the aspects of culture that is for the creative seen as important, but maybe not for a bureaucrat who just care about achieving specific goals of creating right. cultural industry.
And it's like the sustainability factor as well of the massive inpouring of support in all different ways, financial and I think other ways as well. You obviously have given us a very in-depth overview. I think there's many more conversations after this that can go on about kind of more into the historical aspects of culture. But looking forward, you know, taking all that you do know about kind of the history, where do you see this intellectual creative class of people, and how do you kind of see that fitting into the future of Saudi?
I think one thing, the main thing to watch is the expansion of the field is now with the elimination of restrictions, with the funding, the support, there is more incentive for people to be creative. Now it's fashionable in Saudi to be an artist or mm-hmm. to claim to be one. There's a lot of people who try to get into art circles, whether film, design, fashion. So what used to be a rarity, especially in some fields like fashion or mm-hmm. film, I think you will have an abundance of people. And that's quantitative leap in itself would actually, one would expect that it will produce more talent. That's one thing that I'm optimistic about. And of course, the thing I mentioned about the education, the expansion of education and the education opportunity and the career opportunity for people to pursue a career in cultural sector. But also there are some tensions in whether in policy or in the dynamics between the institution and the creatives. I would say maybe there are three aspects to that. First, the one I mentioned, the relationship between the creatives and the community of the artists and the institution. It's actually great to have support from an institution. It gives you legitimacy and funding sometimes. But at the same time, artists and creatives legitimately kind of privately worry about to what extent that we will have the space for our own. Some would be more nostalgic of kind of idealist time where they used to be like just small groups struggling with the system. But that's a question that is being talked about, that right. people will see would the practice of kind of cultural practice will be limited to spaces that uniformly designed or dedicated by X and Y institution, or they will the institution will be there to empower mm-hmm. and to regulate lightly the field. And another question that we just actually discussed about balance between culture for its expressive and meaningful value and culture as monetary value producer, mm-hmm. or the question you see everywhere in the world between the market and the independent and the autonomy of the cultural field. And finally, also the international dimension, to what extent this hybrid of the global and national, or nationalism that is like packaged in a global outfit, would play out. Is there would be a tension? Is there be kind of magnifying the an obsession of the international on the expense of the more local, and what that means for the production itself?
Ahmed, as a cultural expert, I want to ask you what culture means to you.
I think culture has the power of generating possibilities and creating alternatives. The ability for creatives, for intellectual, to offer different visions, to challenge prejudices, normativities. That in itself, it's generating change and dynamism in society.
Ahmed, I thank you very much for packaging all of this information in a very short period of time. I think there's many more conversations to come on a lot of these really interesting topics as we continue to see kind of how everything is going to unfold.
Yeah, thank you, Michelle.
Thank you, everyone, for listening today. I think this is a really exciting episode for me because we are branching out into different topics, different discussions. And I think that these conversations about society, culture, are really important and intertwined. So I hope that everyone was able to learn a bit more about the historical context of culture. And I hope we can continue to have conversations such as these. If you'd like to learn more about the upcoming publications and learn more about the Cultural Studies Unit at the King Faisal Center, you can visit them online at kfcris.com, where you can learn more about their special reports, as well as other commentaries and publications that they are making in regards to society and culture. And as always, you can follow us at the Thaqafat, where we will continue to update you on more really interesting conversations, such as the one that we had today. Until next time, when we continue to connect to the culture, Ma'a Salama.